if you got things to talk about, I'm ready to roll. You can wind me up and watch me go.
I like it. I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to season three. That's right, season three. We've been doing this for three seasons. I know it's crazy. Zebra Stripes Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LaJour, head basketball coach at Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, how are you?
I'm great. Pretty juiced up, as I was telling you in the pre-show. Really good summer. That's no surprise. School off to a good start here. Already October, end of the first quarter, we call it, coming this week. So basketball in full preseason mode. Football, you know, all good stuff right now. Great time of year, fall in New England. So I'm good.
Yeah, I get excited about that convergence where you get end of the year baseball, right? End of the year playoff baseball, football in full swing, basketball and hockey starting. Like, I don't know if there's a better convergence of sport than when that basketball hockey time blends in with the football season. Basketball, hockey, and baseball blends in with the football season.
Maybe the very best time. I think.
Yep. And I mean, and with all due respect to, you know, March Madness, which is fantastic, phenomenal, we love it. But you just have March Madness then, you know. Right,
that's a different conversation. Like that, then we're not talking about convergence of, we're talking about singular events, if you will.
Yeah, but I think as people who love all sport, right? Like, what's the best time for sport? I think it's this time. If you just said, hey, what's the best time for sport? If you're a soccer fan, you've got Premier League in full swing. Like what's not to love? You've got MLS in full swing. Like, what's not to love about this time as a sports fan? WNBA playoffs. We've got the two best teams in the league. I mean, everything that you would possibly want in sports outside of track and field, you already have right now in front of you at one time. You just need to make sure that you got your appointment viewing so that you don't miss your favorite things.
Yeah. So, I mean, in full disclosure, as good friends would know of mine, as I've gotten older, I'm less of the overall casual sports fan. I'm a fan of sport. I'm a studier of some degree of sport. I don't, you know, there are times of year that are better because I lean on basketball and football. So all of a sudden now, January to me, when we're getting ready for the Super Bowl, the college playoff, the basketball season's in full swing on both the college professional level to give me some juice there. So if I'm saying for me, you know, what's the you know, the time I enjoy the most, but excuse me, I'm not sure it's here, but it, you know, it's up there. And as an observer of it, I agree with your argument, but I'm just telling you, for me, yeah, I think it's a little bit later on when I get even more excited.
No, you might be right. I mean, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about the convergence of playoff football that we get now.
Right.
You know, playoff football with playoff college football mixed with playoff NFL football. And now basketball begins to matter. Like the NCAA basketball begins to matter because you've got to position yourself for good seeds in the tournament. NBA basketball matters after Christmas. Like, that is a very good point. Like, it is a very nice convergence of sports there. You even start getting some, like, hot stove baseball talk, you know, WNBA, you're starting to look at who the women's basketball champion is going to be, and then who's going to be those potential next picks into the WNBA draft. Like, there is a lot. You're right. And you start to roll up on a new season of track and field, which I know, you know, you might not be as much of a fan of, but as a casual, as a fan of all sports, I wouldn't even necessarily call myself a casual fan of all sports. As a fan of all sports, definitely a great time. You're right. I like it.
Well,
I don't know which one I go with, but I like it.
Yeah, no, and that's okay. But I'll just add in that I'm a bigger fan of track and field than I am of a couple of sports that you've already mentioned, just because I was a high jumper and throughout high school and did some other things in track and field. So I actually track and field does more for me than a couple other sports, but I'm not gonna let the audience, you know, again, you're continuing to try to nurture my, you know, attention and
yeah, I really want you to, I mean, we can say it, I really want you to pay attention to WNBA.
Yeah, and
I want you to pay attention to it, because at the level of what you love about basketball, you can see it there.
Right.
Like this matchup, by the way, this matchup, which is a phenomenal matchup, although I will admit, I don't know how New York beats Las Vegas enough times in a row to win a championship, because the nuclear options for Las Vegas are more than the nuclear options for New York, even though New York has a loaded team. People have to remember that Vegas, they're doing this without Candace Parker. Like when Candace Parker was there, they looked like the greatest WNBA team ever assembled. And now with no Candace Parker, they still look like the favorites to win the championship. So I don't know how New York gets it done enough to win a championship, but I have a feeling they're probably going to get a few games and they're going to make it very enjoyable. Has been very enjoyable to watch, I will say.
I won't fill in the blank there, because I could fill in the blank from, you know, some of your weekend exploits, but I'm sure it's not that. So what is it?
Watching New England try to figure out this life without Tom Brady. It has been fascinating to watch. And you know, for all intents and purposes, I know that we talk about a lot of things and we cover a lot of bases nationally. But if you were going to like condense us down, we're kind of a Northeast New England type of pod. It's been interesting to watch the Patriots regress back to what they were pre-Tom Brady.
Yeah,
or more specifically, pre-Tom Brady and Belichick.
No,
it's, right?
I'm going to tell you right now, it's the regression's further. It's pre-Foxborough. It's Boston Patriots. It's 1960s and early 70s. Yes, it is.
I'm not going to let you do that.
Well,
no,
I'm
no.
just telling you it is. So, and you ask
it,
any
it might be.
Any New England, older New England Patriot fans will tell you that. Now, the story's not finished, and maybe they turn it around, like some are suggesting is possible, but most are going to tell you unlikely. This is 1960-70 Mike Holovec, Boston Patriot, loser time.
No, I'm saying you don't have to go back that far. This is pre-Pete Carroll.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying
this is pre-Pete Carroll.
Those were good. Those were
no, no, but before Pete Carroll, it wasn't good.
It was better than this.
Like, I was there at that time. Okay. Like, my relationship with the Patriots and Patriots fans, more specifically, because I'm not a Patriots fan, my relationship with Patriots fans starts at 1998.
Right, and mine starts in 1968, really before that.
Yeah. No, I get it. But I'm saying, in 98, it wasn't great.
But it was better than this.
You think it was okay?
Yes.
You think it was better than this?
Yes. Yes.
Five games in, yes.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, if we go to the smell test and the eye test,
yep.
Yes. Okay, that's
what so I'm here's.
Hey, can I just make this? Can I put this out on blast? Because I
put it on blast.
Right, because as far as I know, I have not seen anyone say it. And this is outrageous, but here I would, if I'm Bob Kraft, at halftime of the Saints game, I've called Tom, okay, and I said, TB12, why are you waving your finger in my face? All right, wait, Tom, listen, would you come back and quarterback our team? And by the way, in the name of Bill Russell and Red Auerbach, coach the team. Tom, I know you and Bill had a little thing. I would do everything I could to get Tom behind center next week. And by the way, coach the team. That to me, I don't think it would. I'll just finish the thought. It would be obviously marketing genius. It would be Tom would have to understand. He'd have to run for his life for the offensive line, some of that stuff. But it would salvage, from a business person's perspective, it would salvage the season, and it would give diehard New England fans like myself something to cheer for and be glad about moving forward. That's my – if Bob Kraft is listening, and all respect to Belichick, you know that, but if he's listening, make the change, bring Tom back in, player, coach, Bill Russell style, let's do it all over again.
Okay, so I can get down with player, but I don't think it's the way in which you want to get it done. I think it's player owner. Okay. Like Bob Kraft, give up a piece of the team. Yo, hey, Tom Brady, we want you to buy into, quote-unquote, buy. We want you to buy into the Patriots for X percentage. And then once he buys in, which could happen pretty quickly, right? Once he buys in, he then comes back and quarterbacks the team.
Okay.
Well, and not just this year and next year.
I like that.
Yeah, because you Patriots fans don't want to admit that he's washed up and that it's over for him. And you should suffer through Tom Brady's like complete and total bottom out instead of living off the high of Tom Brady when you lost him. Like you are absolutely convinced, or not convinced, that's the wrong word. You are delusional in your love of Tom Brady to the point that you want to see him be awful as a Patriot. Like, why would you ever want that for yourself?
Well, because right. I think I think you raise a good point, but I'll tell you this. Because first of all, we know he's not only better than the current quarterback that they have, okay? He's better than probably half the quarterbacks in the league at least. And we're not going to run through him, but that's the deal. Yeah, he is. So I would want that. And again, since it is entertainment, sure, we'd be doing some of it for the entertainment, as well as seeing what the supreme competitor could
the train, what the train, what the car wreck looks like as it goes.
I mean, it seems like he might have had something to do with the coaching of the team when he was here, since the same coach is struggling without him, and it was well documented he had a lot to do with the coaching he and Byron Leftwich in Tampa. So, like, that's why I say I'm being real. Your thing about being owning is also a good idea. I hadn't considered, but just
and I'm just trying to get him back.
Right. Okay. Well, I think it's getting back is, listen, Bill's gone, and you are the rightful centerpiece of the New England Patriots, which you were, and which you will always be. And so we're gonna ride it out for 2 years as we try to rebuild this thing from scratch. Because in Belichick's own words, we're going to restart anyway, so I'd take him on his word. Yeah, it's a restart. Hey, by the way, we're going to restart it with Tom at the helm of
and all not things. You.
And not you. And you know what? That's just life. That you got. Hey, Bill, you made some moves. We're making some moves. This is the direction we're going. I am. That is my take, all right? That is my take this week. And I guarantee you, even if it was tongue-in-cheek, Kraft has already reached out and pitched it to Brady, and I damn sure hope so.
There's a great quote that I saw Roy Woods Jr. post. It wasn't his quote. and I don't remember who he was quoting, but I remember the quote. It said that none of these jobs, we don't own any of these jobs. We're only renting them for a certain amount of time, and eventually somebody else is going to occupy those jobs. I thought it's a very good thing to think about in terms of your favorite .. right?
Yep.
Your favorite .. It doesn't matter. At some point, Bob Cousy is going to not be the man. It's going to be Bill Russell. And it doesn't matter how much you love Cousy and how much you think Cousy is great and how much you think Cousy still has left in the tank. It's not his team anymore. It's Bill Russell's team. So you got to get on board with Bill Russell, or you got to wallow in your own like self-pity, because that's what's happening.
Hey, the fall from greatness is universal, like you're saying. You know, some, right, get out on top, which is well, you know, people like that. This one is so, no one saw this. This level of ineptitude was inconceivable to almost all people. Everyone knows the Patriots aren't that good going into the season. Everyone knows they're minus some pieces, but you look and you go, well, wait a second, Mac Jones as a rookie was okay, and they got to the playoffs. And then, you know, last year, obviously Matt Patricia is having, and Joe Judge are having the biggest laugh this year. Everyone, again, knew they weren't, but you're talking about the two worst losses of Belichick's career. You're talking about everything. And I know listeners aren't going to tune into season three just to hear me bitch about the Patriots for an hour, but I think they might. Well, yeah. It's an amazing, as sports people, as coaches, the whole thing, it really is a remarkable failure to this point. And it could change. I don't expect it to turn. And I would, because you texted me the same thing that I listened to Felger and Maz with some callers talking about the quarterback, the first round quarterback, which is who is
Caleb Williams.
Yeah. Bring in Caleb Williams. They don't even have to try to tank it. Just go out and play the games. You're going to lose. You can't beat anyone anyway. So just bring in Caleb Williams, and there's your restart if you don't like the Brady for 2 years plan. My plan.
So I would tell you, and we don't have to stay on it, but I would tell you that a lot of people saw this coming. None of them are in New England, but a lot of people saw this coming.
They didn't see 34-0, preceded by the no. They saw losses coming. Sure.
Yes, they saw Mac Jones as your starting quarterback, and went, yo, that guy, unless you put superstars around him, not just guys who are good, not just guys who are okay, superstars around him, he is not going to be good. Why? Because we saw him not be able to beat out anybody at Alabama for 4 years. And then all of a sudden, because one person leaves and another person transfers, and now you're left with this guy as the only veteran on a college team who should have been beat out by the guy who was behind him as a freshman, i.e. Bryce Young, go out there with superstars everywhere and be good. And somehow the Patriots, because they're horrible at drafting offensive players, they're not bad. They're not mediocre. They are flat out, unadulteratedly horrible at understanding and valuing offensive talent in the draft. They've been horrible the entire Tom Brady regime. They lucked up into Gronk because Gronk was in college hurt, so they got him in later rounds than they would have. They lucked up into Aaron Hernandez. They had a bunch of other tight ends that they tried to draft that were trash because they had no ability to evaluate the position. They lucked up into offensive linemen because they had a super, maybe one of the best ever offensive line coaches in the history of offensive line. And then defense. No, I'm sorry, defensively, they've been good.
Right. Before you leave the offense, though, you're leaving out another key piece to your which would be, hey, by the way, they wrote the book on slot receiving between Wes Welker and Julius Edelman. So another, you know, they wrote the book to with the perfect receivers for Brady.
Yeah, except they didn't draft Wes Welker.
No, no, I know. I'm not saying they did. I'm just saying that that was part of their greatness was the slot receiver.
Oh, yeah. But I don't think anyone's ever doubted their ability to evaluate NFL talent.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They know how to figure it out from NFL talent. They have zero understanding of how to figure out college talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And that has been to the downfall. If you want to start with quarterbacks, hey, we've got Tom Brady. Let's just go and keep trying to get a whole bunch of like versions of Tom Brady and roll them out there, except for the one guy that might not be like Tom Brady, who they have on their roster right now that they're trying to like make a receiver. And I'm saying, if you want to do something spicy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you want to do something spicy, don't turn that thing over to Bailey Zappi. Bailey Zappi was missing wide open receivers by 3 and 4 yards. It made Gronk, like, if Gronk is dissing you, you know you're bad.
Yep.
Put Malik Cunningham out there.
Yep.
At this point, if you're tanking, like if you don't think the season's going anywhere and you're really in the business for Caleb Williams, find out what you have in Malik Cunningham. Because even if you bring in Caleb Williams, you're still going to need another guy that's similar to Caleb Williams when and if he gets hurt. So
yeah. And hey,
I know we've been 20 minutes on the Patriots, but it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And just to follow up on your point, like, so they were, you know, horrendous with the college draft and, but, you know, good at evaluating NFL talent. That seems to be now they're having a hard time evaluating NFL talent too. So what happens again? Well, I'll wrap my close would be, you know what, when things go south, they go south. And rare do you get to see everything unfold because they can't snap it to a long snapper. They can't make a field goal. They can't, like, it's just across the board. And sometimes when things go bad, it just all goes bad, which is rare to see as clearly as this on the professional level and from an organization that used to kind of make fun of people who would play this kind of football, win, lose, or draw. But anyway, you know, I'll give you something that's a lot better. Well, not you maybe, but I'll give people that are excited about season 3 something. I'll give you two things, actually. But the first one is Kristaps Porzingis is the real deal. Like the last time I saw Porzingis. The last time, thank you for that. Could you say that one more time?
Kristaps.
Yeah, Kristaps. Thank you. The last time I saw a guy make that type of entrance to Boston, I was at Camp Marshwood with Red Auerbach watching Larry Bird like day 3 as a rookie. And Porzingis last night did everything. If you're a basketball person, he did everything in that game to give you hope. And by that, he... he did. I mean, he made shots. He went to the rim. He finished dunks. He was excited. He protected the rim. And I'll give you this one. He did everything in that game that Jason Tatum didn't. I was so disgusted with Tatum. And I'm saying it because – no, I'm saying it from this angle, okay? Look at, man, you got new teammates, you got this, you got that, and I get it, it's preseason, it's game one, it's exhibition. You go 3 for 13, I would think with more pride, like, hey, listen, let me show you. I don't care how much I practice, play, I don't care about nothing, but let me, I'm going to give you, Drew Holiday, a little something. I'm not going to go lay the egg that Jason Tatum laid last night. That's an exhibition game where I go, holy smokes. That is just, it doesn't mean a thing to the casual fan, maybe, and maybe even to the smart people. But a guy like me, I watch that and I go, you know what? That's why you make me nervous, because I would think any superstar would have an ounce of pride and saying, let me go show my new friends what I can do. And you showed me nothing.
You're right. Kristaps Porzingis had a phenomenal entrance as into being a Celtic. Might I remind you that Kristaps Porzingis has had a phenomenal entrance into being a Knick. He had a phenomenal entrance into being a Wizard. And he had a phenomenal entrance into being a Maverick. And now he's a Celtic. Unicorns don't get traded three times. Unicorns don't. You know what I saw last night when I was watching that game? I sat back and I kept...
How many teams did Will Chamberlain play on?
He played on two teams.
Was it just two? I know. I was thinking yep. as I said it. I'm just trying
to... He played for Philadelphia and he played for the Lakers. And the only reason he left Philadelphia was to try to chase more championships and because he likes some things that are not on the on the court.
My point is that, you know, and I got to get into my basketball mode, so I'm not quite there, but there may be a unicorn that's played on three. I was going to challenge that statement, but.
But they don't get traded.
Right, right.
That's my point. Right. Like, LeBron's played for three teams.
Right.
He's played for four different – he's played at four different stops, right?
Yeah.
If you count the Cleveland twice. But none of those were trades. At least none of those were legitimate trades. They were all – I'm going here, so trade me there so that you get something in compensation for me.
Got
like
it.
That type of stuff. Okay.
I think the bottom line is, and I'll let you gather up where you're going, but I think the bottom line is the Celtics have a healthy Porzingis and he with a lot to prove. And other than the fact that guys with his bodies are injury prone, which I agree with you on. Other than that, I think there's every reason to believe he's going to be fine. And, you know, I mean, we watched in Boston Gordon Hayward have the worst possible injury right out of the gate. So that was my goal for Porzingis and Drew Holiday and, you know, all the new guys was just, okay, let's get out of this game healthy.
So I think my opinion on the trades of the Celtics. Number one, Drew Holiday just replaces something that you already had, maybe gives you a little bit better score, but Marcus Smart.
He's an upgrade. And he's a champion. Marcus Smart's not.
Yeah, but he's a champion. Is he the reason that they're a champion? I don't know.
Yeah, he's got championship.
You think he was the big cog in why they're a champion, or you just think he was on the championship?
Well, I don't think Marcus Smart was a big cog. I think that was Marcus Smart's problem in Boston, was trying to do more than he could do. So I think Drew Holiday is an upgrade on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. So it's an upgrade, period. You can debate how much, but it's an upgrade.
No. I'll acquiesce that it's an upgrade. To what level, we won't even debate. We'll just say it's an upgrade.
Right.
But Kristaps Porzingis is not an upgrade on defense. Not when you go against any defender.
Well, now you're forgetting something. I thought you were going to say Robert Williams, who wasn't.
Well, great, I'm just saying Robert Williams because you loved Robert Williams on this podcast last year.
No, and I still do, but I didn't love the way he finished the year. Okay, for whatever reason, I didn't. But I didn't like the way the team finished the year either. So here's what I was going to say though about Porzingis and defense. He's pretty dang good. He's not horrible at all. Okay, and by the way,
on ball. On ball.
And off the ball. Protects the rim.
No, I don't think he's going to, like.
He alters shots. Forget about blocking shots. He alters shots. And here's the other thing I'm going to tell you. The game, this is old school coach night, right? The game of basketball actually is, right, three phases of offense, defense, and transition. So when you look at it sometimes, and certainly as you construct play, you have to look at it as in all of those phases. And so when you connect the phases, what is this guy giving you versus what are you getting somewhere else? And that's where I think Porzingis is a complete player that you know, again, we can debate how much this and how much that. He gives you more offensively, obviously, than Williams, but doesn't give you quite the same closeout defensively to the corner, like some of the spectacular stuff Williams would do. But the game is played as a flow game, up and down. And so here's this guy that impacts all three phases of the game.
Yeah, except I think Joel Embiid looks at him like food. I think Joel Embiid looks at him and goes, that's the guy you got to stop me? You didn't see what I did to him when he was in Washington? Like, I don't think Joel Embiid is in the least worried about Kristaps Porzingis. As an offensive player, possibly as a defensive player, nah.
Well, what the Celtics do with Joel Embiid, first of all, my response is to that, and I know you would be, A, it's a team game. So last time I checked, you know, the Sixers got more problems than the Celtics ever dreamed of having. And B, right, we've used Horford to guard Embiid. We've used Marcus Smart to guard Embiid. So the Celtics system of guarding Embiid until Nick Nurse, right, figures out whatever he's going to do with that roster construction, which is going to be another pod, I'm sure. I mean, I think good for the Sixers. I mean, I think they can't be any worse than they were. So more dysfunctional. I wouldn't worry about Joel Embiid. Now, would I worry? I would worry about Jokic. Like, hey, you think you're going to get past a Denver? Yeah, sure. I'd worry.
No, about you can't. That. You can't even get to the Western Conference yet. You got to get out the East.
Right.
The East won't be easy.
No, there's only one team right now that's a threat to them, and that's
they said that last year. Not and the Heat represented the,
yeah.
the Eastern Conference.
Aberration.
It is, except they've done it like multiple years.
No one loves the Heat any more than I do, but aberration. That's why you said you got to.
It can't be an aberration if they've done it more multiple years.
It is when you run into prima donna teams. It is when, you know, the Bucks have fatal flaws, which they've acknowledged, obviously, by the trades they made. And as I've said on this pod before, fatal flaws of the Celtics. So the Heat are just good enough. And from the top, and I mean Pat Riley down to the players, tough enough to seize an opportunity. That will not happen when better teams are more well put together. And by the way, coached too.
So the fact that the Heat has done this multiple times against multiple iterations of these teams means nothing?
Well, when did the Heat win a championship?
They didn't win a championship, but they've represented the Eastern Conference.
What, once?
They've represented the Eastern Conference, though.
Right, yeah, they have.
So it's like...
Yeah, and I'm telling you, they got past imposters.
They got past imposters, and those imposters still exist. You can't say imposter and then put the biggest, what I would say, the biggest European imposter I've seen in the last 10 years in the conversation is why they're real now.
Well, we disagree on that, but the future will play that out. And by the way, if Miami landed Dame Lillard, then I would say I'm all in on this conversation that you're having. But since one of the imposter teams I'm mentioning, the Bucks, has a new coach, has, you know, one of the top players in the game, Giannis, and just added Lillard, I'd say, guess what? They're better. And now they
got worse on defense, though.
Yeah, but and now I go back to my argument that it ain't all about defense.
Here we go. So the Celtics picked up the guy that was the liability for the Bucks, and it made the Celtics better.
Wait a second, what? Time out. You got to. I don't think I slipped up that bad, so I need a replay there.
Well, you said that the Bucks had fatal flaws.
Right, but
the fatal flaw had to have been the point guard play because they went and got a shooter and got rid of a guy who was a defensive guy who could also hit some shots outside as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just think they went and got a stronger scorer. Sure.
Yeah. But they got worse on defense in the
right.
Like, nobody's afraid of Dame Lillard when he gets down in a three in a stance and
right.
D's up.
Right. And that's why I'd say, okay, so in their case, you know, they needed higher octane offense to not be so reliant on Giannis. You know,
okay.
So now that
guy who's not the greatest shooter or doesn't bring that great an offense. Right.
Because the Celtics are a different team, and they've got our guy Tatum, who, again, I'm obviously not.
They've got Tatum and Brown that they paid a bunch of money to.
Right, and so and then they've got Porzingis, who's offensive. So the natural fit, which I agree with, is, hey, you need some of what Marcus Smart. So the Celtic needs were different, that's all, and that's what I'm talking about, roster construction.
What big-time European big has been more of a disappointment than Kristaps Porzingis over the last 10 years?
I mean, again, the story hasn't been written yet, but I'm
sure I'm just saying over the last 10 years.
Well, over the last 10 years, I'm not certain right now, but I'll you know, and the only reason that we'd say that is because of what his ceiling is, what his talent ceiling is. That's why
what his perceived ceiling was
and is.
Right? How is it? How can it be? Is how can we still say the ceiling is the same? Because, he's not.
Well, because guys mature in this league with time. I mean, Jermaine O'Neal with the great Indiana Pacer teams. It took 7-8 years before that much. Paul Pierce, one of the greats. It took forever. So I'm saying this thing. Sometimes,
Paul Pierce. It took forever.
Yes.
Paul. But Pierce he was
nothing but. A
scorer,
a far worse Melo, like a guy that simply played the game, put up numbers, lost, and couldn't lead his team.
He was never better than Melo. He's never been better than Melo.
Well, I think he ended up obviously playing on a stronger team and becoming one of the all-time Celtic greats. His game evolved over time. It took a lot of time. And his game did come around.
Yeah, but he was never
He got help. I agree.
Yeah, and I'm saying he was never like, oh my gosh, like he is not what we thought he was. He came into the league as this.
I would say if you're a Boston fan, and I agree with you, but I would just say if you're a Boston fan, my God, this guy who's should be, and it was Garnett who obviously did this. So my analogy is simply that it takes time for superstars to emerge as what they may go down as their legacy. Their legacy takes time, not always, but sometimes. And I'm saying in this case, and I'm speaking with green hat and shirt and sneakers.
Right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, hey, this is going to be one of the great stories of the season, if not of the decade for Celtics.
Except we don't live in the Jermaine O'Neal has 7 years to get it right society anymore.
Well, that's why in this case, again, one more reason for Celtic fans to be grateful, because Porzingis has then, by my argument, matured other places and now come to you at the right place. A little bit like, Garnett would have been great no matter when he came. But the point is you got him at a time when maybe this thing's ready to happen.
This is the time that he can be that he can be Jokic.
Yeah, and that's the narrative, and it's not going to be
right.
Jokic. I mean, we get it. It's not going to be Jokic, but I know that. I'm not even making that point. It's
just, but why can't he be if he had that level of talent? Like, what are we doing?
It's a different talent, you know. And
Jokic was never considered to be a high ceiling lottery pick guy when he came into the league.
Well, that's also my argument that stuff evolves. Again, back to my art. You're making my points.
No, I'm not, because it didn't take Jokic this long to figure it out.
Well, I mean, you know what? Good for him. And
he's been good. Like, he just now got the credit, but he's been good
No, he's been good, but he hasn't been this good. And I agree with you about the credit and the detractors and all of that. But and then I would say that he's a little bit of an anomaly because his body type and I mean his talent is supreme. And then he's a different, you know, he's a different sort of animal, if we want to use that phrase with it, right? He's a okay. different beast. He's a handful. That's what he is. So I'm not willing to go there and say that Kristaps is going to be that. He's just going to do his thing. Next to this guy is going to do his thing. Next to this guy, and really all that the Celtics have to figure out is, you know, option 1 through 4, and how does that kind of go down?
You feeling good about like the hand, like who the team? The hands that the team is in this year?
Well, what I would tell
you. Because I don't think you felt great about it last year.
No, I didn't. And I don't think many fans did. I like some of what I've seen. I like some reports that have either quoted Coach. And so – sounds like he's had a terrific off season, of just understanding, you know, kind of what he's got to do. I mean, I'm thinking out loud without any luck here, but, some great quotes about, but just, the position and the responsibilities and basically owning what, you know, he's needed to grow from and moving ahead with assistance, obviously, right, that they brought in veteran assistants, Charles Lee and Sam Cassell, that are going to help him for sure. But I just think, yeah, he'll be better. And I do think like
– or usurp him.
I think that could happen, but I don't think it will. It's a players' league. I mean, it's a players' league. Always has been, always will be. Basketball, it's more about the players than it is the coach. I don't think I think that's true in pro sports in general anyway.
Yep. But it's a players' regular season. I think it's a coach's playoff stuff.
Yeah, no, you've said that on this pod before, and I think that's a valid point when you put up – when all of a sudden great teams start playing each other –
difference?
Right.
Greatness is greatness, right? Like we extol what these players can do and what they can get accomplished. And it's like, oh my gosh, they're so phenomenal. But when phenomenal's facing phenomenal, what is the tiebreaker? And yeah, it normally comes down to who's the person pulling the strings on the sideline.
Yeah.
Like what do they bring to the table?
Yeah, and it also, and I agree with that, but it also might come down to, right, in certain years, like what are the intangibles of that, let's call it so-called great team against the intangibles of this so-called great team. So some years,
yep.
right, we might say that, you know, Curry, Steph and the boys in Golden State have a greatness about them and that they go up against the Nuggets who have a greatness about them and so it's not necessarily just Malone and Kerr that are gonna dictate the outcome of that thing. That is just whatever the gods, right, to get spiritual about it, whatever the players and the gods have in store in that particular time and space of the year.
All right, let's get first pod nerdy real quick because I like where we just went. Let's get first pod nerdy.
Can I also say my other – okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. No, I want to hear your other thing, too.
The other thing is simply I'm excited about our starting season 3 and getting, obviously, Konzo Martin on here who played for me 1,000 years ago in prep school and then, you know, has coached college ball, was a professional in the NBA himself you know, we talked about getting him on last year, never happened. So excited about upcoming episode with Konzo. So again,
he's dipped his toe into the podcast world too.
He has.
So
that's a good thing too. His pod with I hope to ask him a few questions about that, but his pod with Darius Miles that you and I listened to was It was just phenomenal. Must listen on your podcast.
All your DSPs, you can find it anywhere you're looking.
That's it. That's it.
Absolutely.
So anyway, a lot of reasons to get excited here in season three. But where are you going?
Because I think that one of the things that we undersell is that people come and listen to us because we do nerd out on some of this stuff that gets into the minutia of coaching and things of that nature. What if I was to tell you that the difference that some coaches make is minimum because they're just not that great a coach? And those coaches may not be the guys that you would think are not the greatest coaches. Because when you put like a Malone versus a Kerr, I don't go, oh my God, those are two of the greatest coaches in the history of like the modern day NBA. I think both of those guys, both of those coaches have a phenomenal collection of talent. And they're good enough to put that collection of talent in positions to be successful. But I point to you this. When the LeBron and Kyrie Irving and Love Cavaliers defeated the Golden State Warriors. So before they brought in KD and went with the cheat code. There was a sequence where they just decided, yo, we're going to make Steph Curry play defense. And everywhere that Steph Curry went, there was a pick and roll that got him onto Kyrie Irving. Could not avoid him. No matter what they did, they switched on picks. And every time they did, they went, and it was Kyrie Irving that ended up with the ball with Steph Curry, and he absolutely torched Steph Curry in those games. That is coaching to a level that a lot of coaches don't recognize because a lot of coaches don't see the game from that perspective. When I look at coaches like, when I look at coaches that don't nearly get the credit that they deserve because they may not always have the talent, like all of the talent and be in the position, I think that gets left behind. The Lakers, you know, when they won the championship and their defensive adjustments and how they played with a big next to AD and was still able to put up points because AD, for whatever reason, just does not want to play the five. And when they didn't force him into heavy 5 minutes, yeah, it was the bubble, but they were able to get it done. And because they were able to put a big next to him, they were able to thwart a lot of the stuff in the paint because you not only had one, but two rim protectors in the game at all times, or at least most of the time. That's a little coaching nugget. Like those small little things, they make a difference when the other person on the other side doesn't have an answer for what you do.
Or well, I'll say this to that. One is. Certainly any coach would agree that there's a lot of coaches out there that don't get the credit that they might deserve. Number two, every coach would say if you're winning, you've got a lot of things, you know, that account for that. First and foremost, players, okay? I disagree pretty strongly with your statement at that level that, like, some coaches kind of see things and make adjustments and other coaches don't. Like, no way. They all understand the game, see the game. I know differently. I'm not going to say obviously look at it differently, but they simply have decisions to make, and some coaches are going to make different decisions, i.e. adjustments, than other coaches. But if it comes down to, you know, well, these guys just don't see it, and these guys do, I'm not buying too much of that, because there's too many hours spent and too much experience there. And I don't believe that. I think you've got a lot of accomplished coaches. And last, to your point about the Kyrie example, again, it's almost unfair because LeBron is the ultimate cheat code. So to use any example that brings LeBron into the equation, we got to say, well, all bets are off on where the opposing coach fits into that conversation, because you're talking about LeBron, and we've seen him, you know, right? LeBron, you, me, and two of your friends, you know, have a chance
going to the championship.
Right. So, I mean, yeah. we got to be careful with that one. And I,
so you don't think there's any merit to a coach who understands ball handling and on ball pressure, maybe seeing something different than a coach that more understands off the ball, like off the ball movement and spacing and things of that nature, how they might see the game differently?
No, I agree with you that coaches have a, you know, are going to have differences in, you know, and we're talking obviously the minutiae, like you said, the nerdyville of,
yeah,
of the nuances of the game. So one coach might be Tom Thibodeau, is known for his defensive acumen, right? And then, you know, maybe a grind it deal, and some other coach, Nurse, is known for his creativity defensively and the interchangeability that we've talked about on the pod before. And then, so, and so within the offense and defensive coaches, just like football, you then get into, okay, how do you play on the ball, off the ball, which is what you're talking about. So I agree with you. Sure, people look at that differently, but they've got staves, and then they put together game plans, and they've put together a lot of them over the years. So really all they're trying to do is within their personnel make decisions about how to, you know, guard whatever they think the most dangerous actions that they're going to see from the opponent.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. You're right. I just think that we all have our blind spots as coaches.
Yep.
And we tend to try to put staffs together that might cover or illuminate some of those blind spots so that we don't get caught there. But ultimately, within the game and the flow of the game, sometimes you just get caught.
And that's right? Game coaching. So that's game coaching, and I agree with that. And to your point, right? To your point. Now I'm not talking out of the other side of my mouth. I'm basically trying to promote Konzo's podcast of It All Counts, so he knows I was trying to hype him up. But Darius Miles, right, you'll recall, makes the comment that he played for coaches who, you know, just he used a couple unbelievable examples that we'll ask Konzo about, but coaches who never drew up a play because he could get whatever he wanted anyway. And he said, Jesus, if you could have just drawn up a few plays for me, you know, it would have, you know, save me some effort or say, you know, would have been a little bit easier. And then played for coaches, right? A couple other examples like that, where to your blind spot point, like,
yeah,
it is, I'm not, I think there's a little less of that even today. I think there's less of that. But, you know, so I actually think, and I don't, this would be, again, we'll have to get some guests on that are in better positions to, and analyze it. I certainly can't, right? So I'm just kind of prognosticating on it. I think the hard part now is all these staffs are so much bigger. It's a little bit like the whole analytic conversation. You've got to decipher through all this information that's coming from a larger group of people than ever before, and then and then make some decisions from that. So you know the filter is just so much different. And maybe the way that some, you know, the way these nuances and things happen is just different than it once was.
Absolutely. But I think so again, right. I think that is a part of what we've seen, right? Yo, I'm going to blindly trust the numbers.
Yeah.
Because the numbers say that the best play is to switch every screen. Don't fight over, don't hedge and get back. The numbers support switching every screen, right? Except, I'm not even saying that's the case.
If we make it about analytics, that's one
fact. Yeah, this is what we're doing. Meanwhile, the other coach is saying, hey, yo, man, that dude can't check you, right? Because at the core of what we love about the game of basketball is mano a mano. Can you check me? Can you stop me from scoring? And like when you get to the point, like, yo, Joker said, bro, I don't care who you put on me. None of you can stop me from scoring. I'm just going to get this ball, and it's going to be Magic Johnson, bully ball down into the paint, and when too many of you come, I'm going to find the wide-open person that's going to drain a three. You're going to be demoralized. Now you're going to run out on them, and before you can get back, I'm going to bully whoever you put on me, and I'm putting the ball in the cup. Like, that's not game planning. That's not philosophy. That's not analytics. That is, yo, I'm just better than you, and I'm going to prove it. And that's a coach believing in a player enough to go, hey, yo, man, they can't check you. Just go to work. That is my biggest issue with Joel Embiid, and partly my biggest issue with Jason Tatum.
Yep.
Like, yo, why are you acquiescing to Jaylen Brown? He's not as good as you. He should never take anywhere near the same amount of shots as you do because he's not you. You're him. And at the essence of the game, when it's time to get buckets, you need to go get buckets because nobody can stop you.
Yeah,
and I think that's a part of the game that some coaches will go, I just got to let him cook. And then other coaches go, well, what does the number say? Let's ride with – I don't know.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you're saying. I mean, I don't disagree a lot of it. I just think letting you know, and again, I'm not gonna come down. I'm gonna have to watch the growth of Tatum this year. He's supposedly his growth includes bigger, stronger, so he doesn't get bumped off his spot by his, you know, in his own words. But you know, my problem there is the inefficiency that he plays with from time to time. That
he should be Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Right.
He should be Kevin Durant.
Right.
It's not really that difficult. Hey, by the way, New England fans, if you were wondering what Jason Tatum should be, he should be Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
He's almost just as tall.
But he should be the Kevin Durant that was with Oklahoma City or the Warriors, not Kevin Durant that was with the Nets, you know.
Why not?
Well, because with the Nets did nothing. It was just ISO ball with no movement. That's another one of the fundamental tenets of the game. No, I'm not.
That's not his fault. His fault.
No, no, I know that. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can't when you say boom, just get to this guy, and it simplifies the game, and then the help. Yeah. I get it to a certain point, but there's a role that offenses play in creating opportunities for all these guys. So I think that has
to be.
And I think and just so we're on that, and I know we got to wrap this thing up at some point here, but I think I'm looking forward to seeing the offensive changes that the Bucks make, because I don't think you can win a consistent basis with Giannis just doing the Giannis thing. So I want to see what additions or changes they make to the way they play offense, because I think it's great in the regular season, but it won't hold up in the postseason against the defenses today. So,
I'll be interested to see if Giannis can play primarily off the ball.
Yeah.
If Dame Lillard is okay with being a spot up shooter.
Right.
This is like Giannis is going to run into some of the LeBron criticism, right?
Right.
Like, hey, you're not really the greatest outside shooter, although LeBron is infinitely better outside than Giannis is. Right. But you're not the most, like, efficient dead red outside shooter. You have to play on the ball in order to be successful because that's where your ultimate dominance is. But now that that's at the detriment to others that are around you, like, it'll be interesting to see if Giannis can do something else. I'm going to tell you the one thing I did not like. I did not like Giannis threatening to leave Milwaukee. Milwaukee has done every single thing in their power to make that guy into who he is and to give him the necessary weapons to win a championship. They did everything. I don't agree with the firing of Coach Bud. I don't agree. I thought that was a scapegoat firing. I think that Giannis had a lot of blame. He should have showed a lot of responsibility for that loss. And until he starts acting like the superstars that take accountability for when they suck or when they don't get it done, they're not going to catch lightning in a bottle again. Like, their one championship was the comedy of tragedy all around the NBA. Everybody they played either had their worst outing or they got hurt. But that's not going to happen again. It's not going to just lay out like that again. And I don't favor them over any one of the four, maybe five Western Conference teams that are coming out that they might have to face in the championship. Let alone, I just don't give them a clear cakewalk to the championship game. It's going to be on Giannis. And if Giannis does not get it done, because it's on him, he's a star. If he doesn't get it done, they need to come down on Giannis the way they get on LeBron and the way they get on all of these other stars when they don't get it done.
The way I'm getting on Tatum. Hey, listen, I want to say excited and many thanks to you for getting this thing going again in year three. I am jacked up, in case you couldn't tell. We've got a lot ahead of us. I know that. And I'm really grateful for doing this thing again and excited to get going. And a little bit of the Boston stuff told me it was definitely that time, which we've been debating for a few weeks anyway. So year three is going to be our best year yet with more guests as we continue to promise. I think by year 10, we'll actually have more than a couple.
We may actually bring on more than one or two in a season.
I appreciate Heineken Zero, one of the new sponsors, in addition to Cycle Bar.
one of our free sponsorships that we give out, Cycle Bar and Heineken Zero.
That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. Yeah, no, I'm really excited about season three. Really excited to talk more ball and continue to nerd out. It's one of my favorite things about the pod is when we get into those pockets and we're talking about the philosophies and the thought processes behind the game. We'll continue to give you some personal stories and all of that stuff as life unfolds in front of us. But we really do appreciate all of you out there who listen and who reach out to Wit and others and say, hey, when's the pod coming back? Or, hey, I love that episode. It really is enough to kind of keep us going and know that we're doing this thing for the right reasons. And if we ever start making legitimate money off of it, we won't all of a sudden inundate you with a bunch of ads, we promise. We will add some, though. If they start paying us, we'll add some ads. But it won't just become a podcast full of ads and just trying to make money off of it. We really want to try to maximize this hour to hour and 15 minutes that we try to keep you for on a weekly basis. We'll try to be more consistent and get you a pod a week. And if we miss some, just know it's not because we don't want a pod. It's because life's in the way, and we've got to take care of life first.
Sounds good.
I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, for Coach Witt, I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Make sure that you like, make sure that you follow the podcast anywhere that you can follow on all your DSPs. Stay tuned for that Konzo Martin conversation that we're going to have. It's going to be a great conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. I know Coach Mitt's looking forward to it. Until next time, you guys be blessed.